Welcome to another episode of The Watchdog here on Mint Press. As you know, this is independent media with no attachment to any form of government or corporate domination. For that reason, we hope that you can support us not only by sharing, liking, and subscribing on this video, but also by supporting us on Patreon. We would be massively appreciative of that. Now, this week we have a very special guest, Kevin Gostola, who is joining us from the US to talk about his new book, which many important figures are advocating for and encouraging you to check out. It is the book Guilty of Journalism: The Political Case Against Julian Assange. Thank you for joining us, Kevin. How are you?
It's my pleasure. It's really good to talk with you. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And if you could just break down for us, I've noticed you've used the wonderful, some lyrics from the wonderful song by David Rovich, the Behind These Prison Walls. I was actually at a demonstration and saw this performed live for the first time. And it really deeply, deeply touched me as a song. Could you just break down for us why you chose this song by David Rovich to kind of open the book?
I used it because he explicitly is singing about Julian Assange. It's a song that is powerful, and it's built around the struggle and the oppression that Julian Assange is enduring. And it's got a very basic but powerful message to it. And one of the things I've done in tandem with covering WikiLeaks and Julian Assange's case and the way that whistleblowers are targeted in the United States is to cover protest music. So I knew that when I put together this book that I wanted to put my mark on each chapter and the intro. When you start each chapter, there are words, and every artist that is in the book in some way or another have used their music or their popularity as a celebrity or an artist to call attention to Julian Assange's plight at some point in the last decade. Maybe they're not as outspoken now, but at some point they were willing to put their craft on the line, risk, you know, potential record deals, risk potential access to venues by saying that Julian Assange deserves support and to be free as a journalist.
Also, I think when you think about the imprint that was left on culture by the war on terror, it spans from different things. So whether it is the use of Eminem in torturing detainees at Guantanamo Bay, or it's an Eminem song where he curses George Bush, or Pink with her song Dear Mr. President. You know, the artistic production, despite corporate monopoly of it, has been indelibly marked by these wars, without a shadow of a doubt. So, Kevin, can you just take us back to the very beginning? Where does the CIA war against Julian Assange and WikiLeaks begin?
Yeah, so you could argue that it goes back to the very time in which the documents are published by WikiLeaks, which are received and are submitted by Chelsea Manning, the U.S. Army whistleblower who was deployed to Baghdad, who's working as an all-source intelligence analyst, who had access to these military databases, a wide range of information. But particular was drawn to the military incident reports, which Patrick Coburn, Middle East correspondent, has described as the small change of war in his defense of Julian Assange when he contributed his statement to his defense in the extradition proceedings. These were daily incidents that were recorded. And so you could see the killings, the civilian deaths, in Iraq and Afghanistan. You could see examples of torture. You could see when there were friendly fire incidents, when soldiers were killing each other. You could see all sorts of things that you come to expect in a war zone. And then the diplomatic cables, over 250,000 of them being provided to WikiLeaks. And obviously the Guantanamo files, which showed the bogus intelligence that the military had collected through torture, the obtaining of false confessions, many of them from a very small group, as we learned from Andy Worthington's work in the UK. He details how it was like 8 or 9 people who were giving the JTF Gitmo justification for keeping these men in indefinite military detention without charge or trial. And so at that point, the CIA probably feels they are threatened. Their whole regime of pursuing the global war on terrorism is in jeopardy as a result of WikiLeaks. Of course, also at the time, mind you, there is a tiny group of people within a Senate office for Senator Dianne Feinstein that are putting together, even though it's not going to lead to prosecutions, they're putting together a torture report. They're digging into the CIA and what they were doing to rendition and detain and subject people to waterboarding and all sorts of other horrific techniques. And so they might have been preoccupied with that. As we know, the CIA actually hacked into U.S. Senate computers to try and interfere with or at least eavesdrop on the kind of work that these staffers were doing to put together this torture report. But then as it progresses, the CIA, with WikiLeaks providing support to NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden to help him get to safety as he left Hong Kong. Of course, he was stuck in Moscow after the State Department revoked his passport. They're looking closer and closer at WikiLeaks. And come 2017, it truly escalates. It escalates to the point where they are openly labeling WikiLeaks as a hostile non-state intelligence service. That's the words of now former CIA Director Mike Pompeo. And the agency is redefining this organization as a spy service so that they can get away with disrupting it and targeting it and treating it as something that does not deserve protections under freedom of the press. And we see in lashing out against them in 2017, in response to the publication of these Vault 7 materials that come out from WikiLeaks about the CIA's offensive cyber hacking capabilities, that that's truly when the CIA is allowed to go off, to use a euphemism from the war on terrorism or a phrase that was favored by people like Dick Cheney and others. The gloves come off. The gloves come off and they're able to do whatever they please to target and disrupt WikiLeaks.
In a sense, it was what Donald Rumsfeld referred to as the unknown unknowns. These are the things that people didn't know they didn't know. And as Peter Galison puts it in his book, Agnotology, The Making and Unmaking of Ignorance, the classified universe is certainly not smaller and is very probably much larger than the unclassified one. In the year the war on terror began, you saw in 2001, the US government carry out 33 million classified actions. And that year alone, it spent $5.5 billion to keep those classified documents secure. And I guess the question is whether it is these recent leaks from the Pentagon, whether it is the invention of the internet in the first place. You know, according to Yasha Levine in his book Surveillance Valley, he posits it as coming out of the defeat of Vietnam and the US military trying to find a way that they can predict unrest and also map populations for counterinsurgency purposes. But then it's out of the internet that you have this great ability for something like WikiLeaks to even exist in the first place. And then on top of all of the repression that's been aimed at Assange, you see the Yahoo investigation where whistleblowers actually come out and say, look, this is what the CIA were up to. What do you think that sort of trajectory in terms of information not being secure, even for at one time in our lifetime, we could say the most powerful empire that ever existed, you know, the United States before the Iraq War was really at the zenith of its political power as an empire. What does the insecurity of US information, which WikiLeaks is symptomatic of, is a symptom of, what does that say about where we are and the ability for powerful people to protect their secrets?
Yeah, and this is something that Julian Assange himself spoke to. I'm not going to be able to eloquently recite word for word what Julian had to say before he was put into arbitrary detention the way he is right now. But he spoke about how at some point or another, it would be unwieldy. It would be impossible for the U.S. government to keep doubling down and adding more infrastructure to keep its secrets under control, under lock and key, that eventually the system might actually collapse in on itself because it wasn't able to support all of the stress that was being put on it to protect these secrets. And, you know, there's something on the order of tens of millions of new classified information, new pieces of classified information every single day. I think that's what you were alluding to here in one way or another, but the rate is astounding. And no system of government, even one that takes care of its people and provides and is benevolent and might have a sterling human rights record, can be counted on to keep that much information secret. It is impossible to do so. And so that insecurity, losing the monopoly over narratives, it's essentially what was happening in 2010 and 2011. As this information was becoming more and more available as it was published, because WikiLeaks was partnering with these media organizations on a country-by-country basis to cover the diplomatic cables, it was an astounding period of about 7 or 8 months in which they were able to give new life to people who had been living under oppressive conditions for a long time. We have to remember that what came out was old news, was normal, was taken for granted, was seen as just a way things were to most US diplomats. And they would write about it in a matter of fact manner, the corruption in Tunisia, the way in which people were dealing with torture in Egypt, the way in which things were unfolding in any part of the world was just written off as the cost of doing business with another country, for lack of a better term. And so when that comes out, and now it is up for debate and discussion, and you see protests and people are thinking of changing it, when it's revealed that the United States is spying on its allies, when it's shown the way in which even people who are supposedly treated as friends of the U.S. are disrespected and are not trusted by U.S. and the intelligence agencies of the United States government are deploying spies to target them so that they can get the outcome on climate agreements, on trade agreements, on wars or whatever, they feel this backlash, and it shames them, it embarrasses them, and it shows that as the country that holds itself out as the most powerful country in the world, it's losing its legitimacy momentarily. And the only way to basically knock that back into place is to make it clear to all these other countries that the U.S. is going to do business with them, whether they like it or not, and that they are going to be pressured into conforming and working, and that, you know, the U.S. will try to offer something and have a transactional relationship, or if you don't cooperate with us, then we'll treat you like we treat our adversaries, might use economic warfare like sanctions. And so there's an incentive for these countries to cooperate. And that's why you see a lot of European countries not actually chart their own course when it comes to the United States, because they can see what happens to Iran. They can see what happens to Venezuela. They can see all these different powers. And so when this information comes out and it suggests that the U.S. no longer controls it, what do they do immediately? They do what Julian Assange predicted. They institute an insider threat program. They expand total surveillance abilities within these agencies. They set up what's like a Stasi-like program where they're encouraging and willing to reward people in security agencies if they rat out their colleague and say, I believe they are spies. I believe that they might be doing something that makes them a disloyal American. I believe that they're going through a mental health crisis or something like a divorce or having trouble with alcoholism that might lead them to release classified documents. And so you should bring them in for questioning. And if that leads to anything productive, they actually were given monetary rewards in some instances for supporting the FBI and the Justice Department and this widespread intelligence effort to contain leaks. It gets doubled down when Edward Snowden comes forward. And so this is the way it is right now, that what we're seeing with these Pentagon leaks right now and the arrest of Jack Teixeira, the Air National Guard reservist, regardless of whether he's a whistleblower or not, I don't think we need to get into that. The focus here is that this information came out. It exposed clear information that was in the public interest about the war in Ukraine and the way that this conflict is being pursued by the US and NATO. And the response of the US is to either discredit it by making claims that are not corroborated, that the information has been forged. They make it murky. They make it seem like it might not be true. And then the second thing is to say that this information being published is a danger to national security and will do grave damage to the United States, even though they'll also say in the same breath that it's nothing new and a lot of the details confirm what was known, and which means that they're trying to distract us from having conversations about what was revealed. And so this is the MO. This is the way that they operate now when it comes to information, to discredit the information itself and or attack the messengers and try and suppress and contain the leaks. They're going to adopt measures to try and make it even harder for information to make its way out to the internet. And like Julian Assange said, I believe the system is going to continue to become an unwieldy mess that will eventually collapse in on itself.
So, Kevin, can you tell us about this Espionage Act, which the US government is attempting to prosecute Julian Assange under?
Yeah, the Espionage Act is a law that has always been used to punish people who speak out against war. So it's fitting, although I don't mean that in an encouraging way, that the Justice Department prosecutors would use it against Julian Assange to bring him to the United States and put him through an unprecedented trial, potentially. Because Woodrow Wilson, when he was president during World War I, was using the Espionage Act to manage the insecurity among elites over dissent against the US being involved in that war. And as you went forward, Daniel Ellsberg, he leaked the Pentagon Papers or revealed the Pentagon Papers and exposed many of the lies that the Pentagon was telling the public about the Vietnam War. And by disclosing those papers, it helped to bring about an end to the war. But of course, he went through his own prosecution. He was charged, and President Richard Nixon wanted, and I think so did Henry Kissinger and others, wanted the head of Daniel Ellsberg to be put on a pike. And so as you go forward through the decades, the thing that stands out is how the Espionage Act is wielded, and it stacks upon each case, makes it easier for the government to go after a person who has revealed information, whether they're a whistleblower or a leaker, we can get into those debates. But by and large, these are media sources. These are people who have given information to the press and then find themselves being prosecuted. And under President Barack Obama, this was his way of managing secrets largely around the global war on terrorism. This was his way of enforcing the protection of secrets about mass surveillance, about enforcing secrecy around the torture program, around enforcing secrecy with the assassination industrial complex that Barack Obama was pioneering. The kill by committee, the baseball cards that were being passed around by people on his staff to select people who would be taken out by these killer robots that would be flying that would help them, they believed, fight the war on terrorism. Of course, they were executing people without judge and a jury. So this is part of a timeline that has a lot of continuity and leading up to Julian Assange now to punish him. This is the U.S. enforcing the protection of secrets around wars, around human rights abuses. And it's the way we can understand the motives of prosecutors and the motivations of the people in the military and intelligence agencies who support bringing Julian Assange to the U.S. for trial is to see what has been exposed, is to recognize that it is showing the true nature of war, whether it's the collateral murder video, which they didn't have the guts to charge Julian Assange with disclosing because they don't want that video to be played in a courtroom. So they charge him with just the rules of engagement documents. But the rules of engagement documents were out there because they were paired with the video, and Chelsea Manning was using those documents to help us see that even by the U.S. military's own rules for war, they had been brutal. They had been savages in the way that they had attacked those civilians that they attacked in that video, the way that they had shot and killed those Reuters employees. And so all of the Espionage Act prosecutions that have taken place have made it easier for the Justice Department to serve the security state. And all the courts in the United States thus far have gone along with the Espionage Act prosecutions. The court in which Julian Assange might find himself, the Eastern District of Virginia, is in a district in which the jury pool would be drawn from people who are working for national security contractors, have family and relatives that are in the U.S. military. They might be detailed to Fort Meade or other areas that serve the National Security Agency. They could be working for the White House, or they might have some other connection to the U.S. government. And they would be the ones that were called to be part of a jury if that was how Julian Assange decided to go about his trial. And that is why it has been called the Espionage Court. And there aren't any cases that have been brought yet by prosecutors that have resulted in a not guilty verdict.
I'm so sorry. Unfortunately, Kevin, we are out of time, but it's been fantastic to be joined by you. I hope everyone out there will pick up the book, Guilty of Journalism, The Political Case Against Julian Assange. We hope to have you back another time in future, Kevin, for sure. And thank you to everyone for watching the show. See you again.